You know, the next part of the contract is about financing, starting in paragraph 3. And it's really interesting that it starts off by saying, buyer represents that funds will be good when deposited with escrow holder. You know what that kind of implies, doesn't it? That you can write a contract and put something in, like, for example, down payment or whatever, and maybe not have the money, but it's going to be good when it gets to escrow. That's actually the truth. It can be done that way. But I'm going to talk later in the program about why that's a big, big risk to the buyer. Let's talk about deposits a minute, because I think we need to understand what that's about. You know, they're called good faith deposits, meaning that the buyer is putting some money at risk. Obviously, they have contingencies, can walk away from the deal if they don't like what they find, but they're actually putting money up. And there's something about putting money up that really shows good faith, and that's why it's sometimes also called a good faith deposit. So how much do you put up? I mean, the theory would be that maybe a buyer should put a little bit up because they don't want to put money at risk. And if I'm the seller, I want you to put as much money as possible. But think about it. When you're a listing agent, doesn't it make sense that you look at an offer and when a buyer's got $10,000 deposit, it's a little more serious than if that same offer had a $1,000 deposit? So I think buyer's agents, you need to have a consultation and a discussion with your clients about strategy here. I want my offer to be accepted. That's the way I'm writing it. I'm writing it not only about price, but it's the overall terms, the time frame, the contingency periods. So what if there were three offers coming in and everybody was at $5,000 initial deposit and mine was at $20,000 initial deposit? If I was a listing agent, I'd say to the seller, hey, look at this. This is a buyer that's really committed. So seriously think about that. Now, also, the language in the contract is really important about what it says about initial deposit because it changed. What the old contract said was that the buyer has given the deposit check to the agent, and it's to be held uncashed until acceptance. Now, that's, to me, not a problem because that's the way we've done real estate since I've been in the business. The problem with that, from a legal point of view, there's always this legal issue, isn't there? The point is that from this legal problem is that many agents didn't get a check. And yet the purchase contract said that he'd gotten a check. And then over the weekend, the buyer changes their mind and calls the agent and said, we don't want to buy the property. Now there is no deposit check. And so the seller says, hey, I want to use liquidated damages to get my deposit that the buyer defaulted on, and there is no deposit, and guess who's liable for that? The buyer's agent. So Carr changed the contract. They now have two options. Option one is that the buyer shall deliver deposit directly to escrow. Now, that sounds like a way around this problem, doesn't it? Oh, the agent doesn't get involved with the check. But I see some inherent problems in that. First of all, are you going to leave it up to your buyer to take the check to escrow? What if they don't do it? What are the ramifications? Secondly, where are they going to take it? Does the buyer know where you opened escrow? What if it's with a big company that has 10 different offices in town, and the buyer works in one town and the escrow company's, you know, 40, 50 miles away in another town? Are they going to take it to the wrong office? Are they going to really take off during work to deliver this stupid check? I mean, the real world is most of the time the agents are going to get the deposit check. The way you do that is to look at the contract in 3A1 and 3A2, and you decide whether or not you want the buyer to take the deposit, or if you want to take the deposit yourself and receive a check, you check the box in 3A2. And so if you do nothing and don't check any boxes, it automatically defaults to the buyer taking the check to escrow. The next issue is increased deposit. That is, it's very common in real estate transactions that the buyer will increase the deposit later, especially if they come in with a small deposit up front. And that's typically done at removal of contingencies. So what does increased deposit mean? First of all, it really depends on whether or not you have liquidated damages. If you look in the liquidated damages paragraph, you're going to see whether or not the buyer and seller have initialed that. If liquidated damages is included in this contract because buyers and sellers have both initialed that paragraph, then we have another issue to deal with. Because if you read liquidated damages, it says that in case a buyer default, the seller is entitled to the deposit paid, meaning that how much money is in escrow. So it's really important that if we have an increased deposit, that as a listing agent, we make sure that not only the buyer increases the deposit on time, but they also have to reinitial the liquidated damages clause. Otherwise, the deposit, even if it's in escrow, won't be considered liquidated damages and the seller won't get it. That form is called the RID, Receipt for Increased Deposit. So if you're an agent for a buyer, when you get the buyer to increase the deposit, you also get them to sign the RID form. If you're the listing agent, you make sure that even though the money got into escrow, you make sure the RID form gets signed. Otherwise, in case the buyer breaches the contract, the seller will not get that increased deposit as part of their damages.